Number one, when meditating, why is my mind dull? The error there is not your mind. If it was your mind, you'd be able to say, oh, don't be dull. But it's not yours, is it? Your mind is out of control. It is running according to causes and conditions. So if your mind is dull, what are the causes that your mind is dull? Answer, because you're tired. Simple thing. So, when I was a young monk, I was always really dull. You get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was such a, we had to go to about 50 minutes to get to the hall to start meditating. You're always really sleepy and just nodding. And so what did you do? You decided to try and use some willpower. Come on, you can do it. Really struggle. Still. So what did you do next? Had the matchbox trick. So the matchbox, you got a matchbox. You didn't have many things we could use in those days. A matchbox, take the cover off. So you just had the tray. You put the tray on top of your head. This is just a piece of tissue. And if you nodded, it would fall off. And you could hear it. Feedback. You knew you were actually nodding off. Because you know what it's like sometimes. You think, I would have had really peaceful. Was I asleep or was I in jhana? Sleep. So, but that would actually tell you because it would not. It only took me a couple of weeks and I beat my sleepiness. Amazing. Until somebody came up and said, Ajahn, I've been watching you. You're still nodding, but in a different way. Instead of the usual way, you're going... The psychology, I've seen that with other monks try that. That's how it works. So, what? Then I started... I used to keep on trying. And then what happened was... I went to Bangkok to do visas and find a nice place to stay. And at that time, we could actually stay at Wat Bawon, known central Bangkok. That's a royal temple, really rich. And they had a place for visiting monks to stay. Because Wat Bawon, Ajahn Chah was well known, so we could stay in this new building they had. Little rooms for monks, very comfortable. And they, no mosquitoes, and you had, someone found this air-conditioned, room, which they used for giving lectures and classes. It was like a study monastery, but no one was using it between, 3:30 and, 5 o'clock, because those monks never got up that early, but we did. So we got the key for it, so we could actually meditate in this really comfortable, air-conditioned room, early in the morning. And also, because we're going arms round in Bangkok, it wasn't the old frog and rice anymore. It was actually quite nice food, which had some nutrition in it. And then I found all my sloth and torpor vanished. You get up in the morning very peacefully. So this was experiment. When you're in the jungles, malnourished, Ajahn Chah used to say 4 hours sleep a night maximum. But didn't have CCTV cameras in the room. I got it down to 4.5. I could not get it more than 4.5 a day. So I was sleep deprived, malnourished, and I was born in England. This was in a really hot, humid jungle. There's still jungle trees there. It was really hot and humid. I wasn't used to that. So, it's not any disrespect to the Lord Buddha. But I thought if the Lord Buddha had been born in England and was in a sort of a jungle like that, malnourished and sleep deprived, probably he would have fallen asleep as well. It was just cause and effect, nothing to do with me. And I proved that because once you had better food, once you had, a decent sleep, once you had aircon, then my meditation was great. I realized it was just causes and conditions, that's all. Which, you know, in Pali is called sapaya. And that's where we get the Thai word sabai from. You know, so the Thai pronunciation doesn't mean the same thing, but that's where it comes from. Sapaya, like causes and conditions are helping you. And then I realized, and a lot of this thing, it's not just a personal failure if you fall asleep. So don't think I need more effort. No, investigate. Why? Why are you dull? And then, so you decided to investigate the best you possibly can. You know, enough rest, enough food, you know, in a place where you can feel comfortable. Unfortunately, I don't know what you think about this hall. Is it hot? Is it cold? How many people think it's too warm in this room? How many people think it's too cold? Why have you got your blankets on? It's just crazy, you know, sometimes, especially have a Singapore-Malaysian retreat here, and I'm just sweating, and they got their blankets on, and they say, can you turn the aircon down? It's just different people, you know, different sort of, I can't take this off. You're lucky, you know, you can just... But what happens is that, you know, different people, different sort of metabolisms. So you try and find the best for you. One of the great advantages of this place, you've got your own room. So you can actually get in there, and if you just adjust things, you know, you can get it just right, not too hot, not too cold. And so you get your own little room there. So mind is dull because of causes and conditions. Why is my mind restless? Because it was dull. The two always go together. So what I used to do, I did actually try to force my mind, use willpower. And sometimes, you know, you can get some strong willpower up. Okay, I'm gonna just not watch for every breath. Come, I'm not gonna miss one. You really screw your mind up really tight and you use willpower. You know what happens when you use willpower? My mind got really restless. It was as if, you know, that you were sleepy. And then what happened? You really turned off on the effort, and then it went too far into restlessness. You say, just calm down, just not too much effort. And then I was half asleep again. It was like restlessness and sleepiness, dullness. It was like two extremes on a pendulum. And always, if you were dull, then you try and wake yourself up, and you were restless. Restless, calm yourself down, and you fell asleep again. Could not find that middle way. So first of all, you realized it was a lot to do with the causes and conditions, your health, the situation you're in. There may be people who are a bit sick. This is one of the reasons why many of you have been working hard. Many of you have been traveling from different places, which means that, you know, you've got to catch up just on your rest. One of the reasons, I haven't said this yet, but people have been doing it anyway, having extra naps. The reason for that is, so often I've seen this. Who was it? This exec in Sydney years ago came to my retreat over there, and she came again, one of these midnight arrivals. And she came and checked in the following morning and said, I just arrived, I didn't get the instructions, what should I do? And I said, I'll give you my first meditation instruction. What is it? Go to bed. Catch up on your sleep. It was obvious she was just so tired. And at least she had enough confidence in my wisdom. So you know what she did? She went to bed. And also they had dormitories. So she went to bed. She got up for lunch, then she went to bed again afterwards, came out for the talk, then went to bed, got up for breakfast, and after breakfast went to bed. She spent the first 3 days just catching up on her sleep, just about, and she told me that all the other people in her dormitory room were looking at her, you're just slacking, you know, and she said, they were so angry at me. I said, they weren't angry, they were jealous. That's what they wanted to do, but they didn't have the guts to do it. And of course, what happened? The first 3 days, you know, she just caught up on her sleep. And in the next 3 days, because she was rested and ready to go, that she caught up with everybody else after another 3 days. And then after sort of 9 days, she was way ahead. She was a star meditator. Yeah, the first few days she was just relaxing, getting her body ready for meditation. Because sleep deficit is one of our biggest problems. Thank you for yawning. It proved it. This lady over there, she yawned. Yeah, a few other people do that. And it's because we are tired. Now, how can we meditate when we're that dull? Except through force. And force doesn't cut it. So instead, you relax, you rest. You are kind to your body. And when you're kind to your body, that's sometimes what I did. Really sleepy in the morning, getting up all that time. But it's okay, you want to go to sleep, fine by me. And because I never fought, because I never just struggled or strived, I found after a short while, I woke up. And when I woke up, you didn't go to restlessness, you got this wonderful, that's how I got that middle way. Just peaceful, poised, but not restless. And then of course you realized why. Is that two parts of the mind, the doer and the knower. I said I'd come back to this, probably this is the second time I mentioned it on this retreat. It's only the second day. So I've mentioned this many times, the doer and the knower. If you want to know the Pali, Sankara and Vijnana. And when you do stuff, you lose energy. It's not just physical energy, it's mental energy. I think I did actually see the amount, 20% of the energy which you take in through eating, 20% of that goes used up by the brain. It's amazing, just as a small organ. I remember just going to an autopsy and seeing the brain taken out. I thought, that's so small. Such a small thing creates so much trouble. And so, it's only a small organ, but that takes an inordinate amount of actually the energy. Because you're doing too much. Thinking, planning, worrying, struggling. That's where the energy goes. And so if you're dull, all that energy is sucking it out. You're getting more dull. You never get out of dullness by struggling and striving. So instead, I just let it be. There was nothing wrong with being sleepy. It wasn't against my precepts. So I allowed myself to be sleepy. Let it be. Open the door of my heart to sleepiness. And because I had a tiny bit of mindfulness, but I used that mindfulness not to interfere with things, to be in the moment, to be sleepy. And then, you know what happened? All the energy which I was wasting, struggling, all that energy which we're just throwing away, it came into my mind. It recharged. Now, if you've got a sort of a mobile phone, I've seen already some of you have found the hot spots around the monastery or down the road where you can see your mobile, get messages. But if you've got your mobile phone, you're charging it, but you're watching a movie or doing something at the same time, you're not charging it. It just gets sort of flat, it gets more and more flat. Same with you. Your brain gets more and more flat the more you think. So just leave it alone. It's got a natural charger. Just be mindful. Don't do anything. And your brain charges up. So you find you get awake. You get more awake. You get more awake. You get more awake. You get this wonderful poise, which is not dullness. It's not restlessness, you're just right there, effortless. It's the stillness allows you to energize. And hopefully that you'll do that on this retreat. Hopefully I'll do that as well. I've been really busy, as you all know. I always feel, you know, I feel always a bit embarrassed years ago when they say, we just chanted it. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness, not busy with duties. At least I'm honest about it. But you know, trying to let go, but sometimes people don't let you. So anyway, here we are, just learn how to be still. Because when you're still, it means, what does stillness mean? It means not doing anything. Just being here. Not trying to get things, make it different, not trying to wake up, just being here. And as I do that, then you find the mind wakes up and you get energized. You get this wonderful place between restlessness and between dullness. And you're patient enough to let that happen. One of our problems, we're impatient, we want it now. 3 days of sleeping? I can't do that. You know, it's so hard to get in one of these retreats. You know, I can't waste a day. 9 days. So, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to really make it happen. Those are the stupid people. Enlightenment or bust. Every time, it's bust. So, I don't get into that stupidity. So instead, we just learn how just to be. And when we're being, then we wake up. You know what the word for waking up is in Pali? Gujati. From that, the past Bhadasur, Buddha, awakened. Interesting idea. It's like people who are asleep, they're dull. And they try to get in line by being restless. But no, you find this middle way between restlessness and dullness. Poise, peaceful, still. You really wake up. And it doesn't end there. You really wake up. You fully wake up. You totally wake up. You extremely wake up. You ultimately wake up. You more than ultimately wake up. You get more and more alert, more alive. It's a wonderful thing to do. Sometimes you see people going around, they are zombies. You're the walking dead. Oh, that's a movie. But it means that we're not really energized. So, when you are energized, while your mind is restless and not dull, when you're actually really awake, you're happy. I call it powerful mindfulness. Superpower mindfulness. You really are awake. There's all sorts of wonderful things happen. But no, to give it a time, give it some patience, and it'll all happen. Where's the kangaroo around Jhana Grove Monastery? Ah, the kangaroo is your mind, hopping around. We sometimes call it monkey mind. We don't have monkey minds here, we have kangaroo minds. Jumping up and down, jumping up and down. Never being still. You ever seen a kangaroo being totally still? Always seen them jumping. Grazing, always going on to the next piece of grass. So anyway, if you see the kangaroos also come out at night, so you have to wait. The kangaroo comes out. But anyway, don't come out here. We did have those kangaroos eating the lawn around those stupas. So that's why we close the gates so the kangaroo doesn't come in. And you think, Ajahn Brahm, that's really cruel. What's wrong with the kangaroos having some delicious, juicy grass? And the reason is number one, they don't just eat it, they pull out it by the roots. And they poo everywhere, and they leave ticks. So if you want ticks on you, open those doors, and let the kangaroos come in, and with them comes all these nasty little ticks, and so you get tick bites. So anyway, that's why we keep the doors closed, so the kangaroos don't come in. They have a whole forest to eat. They take a tiny little bit. They've got the forest, they can go and have something to eat. Anyway, after 10 minutes of relaxing the mats, I always sleep soundly. I don't know how or when I fell into sleep, but I lost my mindfulness after relaxing. But you kept your kindness. You were kind. Kindly advise, if I have to sit in the open air, I have to do more walking meditation, how to treat sleepiness. Now, if you try and treat sleepiness, the best way is the bed. You know, that's why you've got beds. That's what they're there for. So, what to do is use what I say about mindfulness. Ask the question. Body, what do you want to do? Be aware of your body. Ask that question. Body, what do you want? And say, oh, I actually need a glass of water. Amazing. Every time I ask that, I get an answer because I'm aware and sensitive to my body and it needs some water to drink. Amazing people how unaware they are of their body. When I was in a time with Ajahn Chah, that, you know, most of the time we didn't have shoes, especially when we went for alms round, you know, couldn't wear shoes. And he noticed, you know, when all the Western monks came, they always had these band-aids on here and wounds there. Our feet were a mess. You know, because, you know, we weren't at all aware of where we were treading, and there were sort of stones and there were tree stumps and all sorts of stuff over there. So we always had these wounds and covered with band-aids on our feet. You know what Ajahn Chah told us? Because the Thais never had those wounds. He said, you Westerners have got stupid feet. And I thought, what a wonderful way of putting it, stupid feet. And it was true, because all our awareness was up here somewhere, thinking about the meaning of dependent origination. Well, I was treading on all sorts of sharp stuff. So we learn how to be aware of our feet. And so you ask your feet, how are you down there? Okay, nothing dangerous there. My whole body, how do you feel, body? I feel a bit tired. So, if you feel tired, then you ask your body, what do you want? And my body said, it would be great if I could just go to my room and just meditate and just have a nice rest. But I said, okay, but now I've got my duties to perform, so I'll carry on talking here. But that's what you can do. You're totally free to listen to your body. You know what happens? Sometimes your body says, no, when I have some time, sometimes it's really weird. Sometimes, you know, I've had a nice rest. And you've got like a free morning, which is quite rare. And I asked my body, what do you want to do today? And the body said, I want to go to bed. But I'm just taking you to bed. I've just got up, just had the breakfast, and now you want to go to bed again? Take me to bed, it says. And you know that if I lay down, and then I have this really deep sleep for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and when I wake up, I feel tremendous. What's actually happening is my body is telling me, you know, you're tired, you're sick, you may have some flu coming on. I don't really know the symptoms, but my body knows it before I do. And all I'm doing, I'm being sensitive to it. If it's indulgence, you lay down, you don't go to sleep, you know, you got the wrong message. But a lot of times, I started getting this reinforced when I read this little book about heart attacks. Heart attacks don't come out from the blue. You have minor ones, first of all. But you know, people aren't aware of what their body is doing. So because they're not aware, that, you know, it gives you many, many warnings before the big one comes. You don't heed those warnings. That's why people just say, well, I thought it was okay, it just came out of nowhere. It didn't come out of nowhere. You weren't paying attention. So I always ask my body, how are you doing? How do you feel? What do you want? And my body is very wise, because I'm sensitive to it, and you care for it. So if you want to do something in this meditation retreat, learn about your body, become sensitive to it, find out what's going on there, and if it tells you something, follow it. You know, there was when I first went on pilgrimage, in 1972. Still a lay person. I thought that, you know, you're Buddhist, you should go off and visit the holy sites. So I went overland, really poor. You know, I never actually, at that first trip, I never found Kusinara. I went into Delhi and said, where's Kusinara, where the Buddha died? We don't know. It wasn't on any maps. I couldn't find my way there. Lumbini, it was cut off because of floods. But Bodh Gaya was great because there's no one there. It was just totally different to what we have these days. It's just empty because you had almost the place to yourself. It was really great in those days. But anyway, as soon as I got into India, over from Pakistan, I thought I had a really tough stomach, but I don't know what the food was in this Pakistani vegetarian restaurant. But I was just so sick afterwards. And so I was just in this cheap hotel somewhere, and vomiting, diarrhea, and just decided just to relax, rest. I drank lots of water, but I had this great craving for salt. The first thing I did when I could get out of the bed and walk was go across the road to one of these cheap, sell everything, and just get a bag of salt. And I kept munching the salt. And I kept munching it, and I started feeling better, just because I never knew at the time, if you get diarrhea, it's not just water you lose, you sort of use the salt. And my body told me that. That's what I needed. So I listened to my body. It's not bad for me. People say it might be bad for you, but at that particular situation, I needed it. My body told me. So those are little things which, when you're sensitive to your body, you listen to your body, it tells you what you need. So anyway, I do the same with my mind. So if you you want to understand this practice, you just ask your body, ask your mind, mind, what do you want? What do you need right now, mind? And sometimes the mind says, just thank you for paying attention to me. What I need is a bit of kindness. And sometimes my mind says, okay, I just want to go for a walk. And you go for a walk, and then the mind says, okay, enough. Now what do you want to do? I just want a cup of tea. So you go and have a cup of tea. Now what do you want? You know what happens when my mind says, I want to meditate now. And when we meditate together, because my mind wants to, it's just so easy. Instead of controlling your mind. Do not treat your mind like a slave. Right, mind, meditate. No messing around. And if you wander off, smack. You don't do that to your mind. You're kind to it. And if you're kind to the mind, you just hang out together. It's not restlessness. When you are restless, you should ask, what are you trying to run away from? Mind. And you know what my mind said? I'm trying to run away from you, Ajahn Brahm. You've just been mistreating me. Tell me what to do all the time. Never understanding. And then you tell your mind, okay, sorry. Okay, let's work together. Let's have harmony together, my mind and I. And now, my mind and I, we're best friends. We hang out together. I do get very busy, as you all know. And then it comes a time, you're all gone asking me questions in my room. And my mind says, yeah, we're together again. Yeah, what do you want to do? Yeah, let's hang out together. Me and my mind, best of friends. And sit down there, just watching my mind. My mind just enjoys my company. I enjoy it because I don't give it sort of any trouble. So we chill out together. That's where we end restlessness. So you can understand, you have a friend, someone you really love, and if you try and sort of control them, tell them what to do, they're out of here. But if you love them and kind to them, you enjoy each other's company, then you just hang out and just minutes, hours go past, and where did that go? Just having fun together. So, that is how you cure restlessness. Not by beating your mind and say, you're not going to run away again, mind. Otherwise, you're really going to catch it next time, even worse. Of course, the mind will run away. So instead, be kind to the mind. And the mind kind to you, get the big, good relationship. And then you're really sweet. Anyway, next question. can we do a guided meditation in the morning? The metta meditation at the end of the retreat is really a good nothing. Doing a few such sessions would benefit us all. It would also give an opportunity for us to incorporate metta meditation in our daily practice. Maybe I was thought of maybe doing a little bit of guided meditation in the, at the beginning, but the reason why the metta meditation at the end is very powerful because it actually does draw from all the good energy you've done over 8 or 9 days. If I did it at the beginning, it wouldn't work so well. So, but I think it's a good idea to do some guided meditation, so I'll probably do some tomorrow morning and then just see how we go from there. Dear Ajahn Brahm, someone told me that when joy, happiness comes from watching the breath, do not pay attention to the feeling, but go back to the breath. That is according to the Anapanasati Sutta, correct? No. And I will show you that if you want to see the word of the Buddha, the Anapanasati. I'm now going to introduce you to one of my favorite words. Go, Maya. Many of you know that word, which is why you laughed. Go, G-O, is a Pali word for bull. You know, the male sort of cow. No, not the cow, I don't know what they call it. Anyway, but you know, a bull. And mayang, the go mayang, means what comes out of the back end of the bull. You know, the poo. But you know, you don't call it poo, you call it S-H-I-T. So, you know, bull plus S-H-I-T. You know, people just get really upset when I say just what other people say. So instead, and Ajahn Chah, he always used to say, ki this and ki that. You know, ki is the word for S-H-I-T. So anyway, to behave, because people want me to behave. I call it Gomayang. So every time I say Gomayang, you know what it means. You know, BS. So that's actual Gomayang. And that's not just harmless Gomayang. That is very, very dangerous Gomayang. Because if you look at the Anapanasati Sutta, it says the fifth stage of the Anapanasati Sutta is as you breathe in, you experience joy. As you breathe in and out, you experience joy. As you breathe in and out, you experience happiness. You're supposed to do this. You're not supposed to go back to the breath. You're supposed to develop the happiness, the joy. It's natural. I don't know why people are afraid of happiness. The Puritans, those extreme Christians, they were the ones who defined their religion as, this is definition of Puritan Christianity, the fear that somewhere, someone is being happy. Wipe the smile off your face. You've got to suffer. If you're not suffering, you're not really practicing. That's absolutely crazy stuff. And you just look, okay, you've got all these happiness quotes now. You look at the one of the great suttas, the Dhammadiyada Sutta. Dhammacetiya Sutta. The monuments to the Dhamma in the Majjhima Nikaya. And there, King Pasenadi of Kosala, he used to rule at Sawati, right next to the Jetavana Monastery, the Jeta Grove Monastery. And that's the monastery where the Buddha spent more time than anywhere else in the Jeta Grove Monastery. And you can go there these days, you can still see the ruins of the place, it was kept going for a long time, but you know, I was really wanting to argue, because when you go there, you had to pay entrance fee, even monks. So that is not fair, because we have it in stone. It's in the inscriptions. That monastery was given to the Sangha of the four quarters present and yet to come. I am one of those Sangha. It belongs to me and my friends. You know, I should charge you, gatekeeper. that's actually what it says. It's a very beautiful little thing when you dedicate a monastery of monks or nuns, it's to the Sangha of four quarters, they are the owners. In other words, this whole tradition, you know, of the four quarters means, you know, the whole world, and present and yet to come. So the job of the present rice is just to look after the place. We don't really own it, but we care for it for future monks and nuns. And that's a very beautiful thing, because sometimes, you know, that, oh, I remember going to, first time I went to Sri Lanka, and they took me, I wasn't well known then, thank goodness, and so you could go anywhere and just people would just leave you alone. So I remember just going to, just outside of Mahintalay, there was a really nice, really cool old monastery. And they gave me overnight a cave to sleep in. It wasn't very comfortable because, you know, it's a stone bench. But, you know, I was young and I was used to sleeping out in the jungles and the forest of Thailand, so that wasn't a many big deal. But what really impressed me was over the door, they had the dedication, and they dedicated it in the 4th century or something. That was about 1600 years ago. So I was staying overnight in a cave where monks had been there for 16 centuries. And it was mine for the evening. And that was just so inspiring. It really gave you just goosebumps. You just wanted to meditate. You felt, you know, a bit embarrassed about sleeping because of the whole history behind it. That was amazing. And the reason why, you know, you're allowed to go in there is because it was belonged to you on the door. To the Sangha of the Four Quarters, present and yet to come. So it's my turn to just go in there. And later on somebody else would go in there. And that sort of history, that whole idea was amazing. But anyway, back to the Dhammadhyaya Sutta. King Prasenadi, you know, he had the Lord Buddha really next door, walking distance. So, you know, just after his worldly stuff, he'd just go and just see the Buddha. Just how fortunate that would be to have a Buddha just, you know, so close. And so he went to see the Buddha, and the monk said, oh, you know, he's in his kuti. But he said, no, you're the king. If you knock on the door, I'm sure the Buddha will let you in. And so he knocked on the door, and the Buddha let him in. And then the king immediately got on his knees and started kissing the Buddha's feet, kissing them all over. And, you know, he said, what are you doing that for with the Buddha? I just, you know, just, you have this wonderful love for a teacher, you care. He said, you've been so amazing to me all these years. You know, as a king, you know, you can't trust other people, and sometimes other people don't know what they're really up to. But I can always come up here, and you're just like a father figure to me. And you give me so much just to show my compassion to you. This is just what I want to do. And so you know that once somebody tried to do that to me, there was, I remember his name, Santikaro. No, he was a monk with Venerable Buddhadasa for a while. And I was over in Bangkok. And you know, he's junior to me, American monk. He just, when he saw me, he said, oh, Ajahn Brahm. And he went down and kissed my feet. He said, what the heck are you doing? You'll catch something. And he said, you don't remember. He said, yeah, why? He said, because when I was a young monk, he just was visiting, you know, Wat Nanacha in Thailand, and I just taught him some meditation. He said, that just changed his whole life. And even though he became a monk, became a bit of a teacher, I don't know what happened to him since. He went to the United States. But he had so much gratitude. He said, I don't care about catching disease, I need to do this. It's just showing respect. But please don't do that to me. Stay off my feet. But anyhow, the king went to see the Buddha and said, what are you doing that for? Just out of great gratitude. And I'm not like attachment sort of love, but it's just beautiful. Thank you so much. And he said, I'm so lucky to have you as a teacher and so close by. And then the Buddha asked him, well, why do you actually like coming to this monastery? And he said, because when I come, this is the important quote, when I come into the Jetavana monastery, when I come in here, all the monks, because the nuns were in another monastery, all the monks are happy and smiling. That's what they look like. That's what their demeanor was. Happy and smiling. And the Buddha said, yes, great king, that's what you can expect when the monks are practicing properly. When they start to get insights, they'll be happy. And you quote that from the suttas just to show that is what is supposed to happen. Which is one of the reasons why when happiness comes up, it's not a mistake. It's not, oh my goodness, I must be doing something wrong. I'm enjoying meditation. Quite the opposite. Even a few kids today, they were just school holidays, they were coming up and their mum or whatever it was, and their friends, they were totally saying, oh, just, how can these young ones, how can they concentrate and focus on their work? And so I said, well, you know, what do you like doing? I said, video games, movies, like watching sport. So, well, when you're watching sport on the TV, you know, is it easy to focus? So, yeah. When you're playing your video game, it's easy to focus? Oh, yeah, I don't get distracted playing video games. When I do maths, yeah, I get distracted. Why? It's because you're enjoying playing video games. Because you're enjoying watching the sport. So I said, well, just, you know, sport, maths quizzes, all the same. It's just a game. It's just a little competition. It doesn't matter who wins. You know, you have a maths quiz, a maths Olympiad. Let's just change your perception of it. It's joyful. Give it a go. And that means that you can focus. So they got the idea. If it's joyful, if it's fun, of course, it's easy to meditate. So, that's actually how we... So when joy and happiness comes when watching the breath, do not pay attention to the feeling, but go back to the breath. That is according to the Anapanasati. It is not according to the Anapanasati Sutta. It's actually totally the opposite. Would it be better if we let the mind choose without controlling, go forth with the flow and just wait for the mango to fall into the hand? Thank you. Exactly. So, in other words, when it gets happy, just let it be. And it gets happier and happier and happier. And happier and happier and happier. And happier and happier and happier. Oh, oh. Wow. Oh, yeah. Whoa. That's what it's like. I always remember this fellow. He was such a great fellow, but he got addicted to heroin. And, you know, I don't know much about heroin except when he said he just tried just, you know, one hit of heroin. And he said, I may not be right here, this is what he told me. He said, for some people it doesn't do anything, but for him, one hit and you're hooked for life. It just grabs you straight away. And he was trying so hard to overcome that addiction. He had a beautiful wife who was just so supportive, struggling with his addiction. And so they came to Bunyana Monastery over the road. You know, just to, you know, see if really supporting conditions, you know, stress, trying to give him a bit of space. And he was doing really, really, really well. But he said that if you've got an addiction like that, 1,000 times a day, he has to say no. Of those 1,000 times, one time he says yes, and he's addicted again. It's just such a terrible, terrible, terrible sort of struggle. And he was going so well, but the reason I tell that story, but then eventually he broke again and just to start again. One thing he told me, that, you know, he did get a bit of blissful meditation. I thought, yeah, maybe this is going to get you out of the heroin addiction. And I always remember him. I was going back to my cave, and he came running up that little path, you know, from the kitchen to the where I stay in the cave at Bodhinyana, came running up to me. He said, "Little Master, well, please stop for a moment. You know, what happened?" And he said, "I never thought I'd ever say this." He said, "I know that you kept on saying and marketing that the bliss of meditation can be, that is better than sex, orgasm, much better." And he said, "Yeah, well, I thought maybe that, but I never thought I'd ever say it's better than heroin. Because apparently the high of heroin is way better than orgasm." So, and this was actually another level. And I thought, wow, great. Maybe now you can actually get past this. But it didn't last. But that is why the joy is part of the path. A happy path. That's why it really is a beautiful path to go on. So anyway, hopefully that will happen to you. Just get a lot of bliss, a lot of happiness. Don't throw it away. That's what's supposed to happen. When we do walking meditation, which should we watch? Feet or breath? If you watch your breath when you're doing walking meditation, you'll find you'll squash so many of those little millipedes. This last retreat we had in November, there was a nice little snake who was hanging around our jhana grove. And it looked like it was a dugite. So venomous. But that dugite was just slithering around here, slithering around there. People were watching it, giving lots of loving kindness. I think the dugite really enjoyed the attention. And it must be a lonely life for a snake. And it was quite safe. But if anybody was watching their breath when they're walking, breathing in, breathing. You step on that snake and of course he might bite you. But it was just a beautiful little snake. It's probably hibernating here somewhere now. You don't have to be afraid of these things. If you're kind to them, look after them. It's amazing just how kind they are to you. Beautiful animals. I know a lot of people who saw it, they thought they'd be afraid of the snake, but they just got some such good vibes from the snake. They're just hanging around here, having a good time. And even I remember just Bianca, you know what Bianca's like, very kind to all of you. She even put some water out for the snake, because it was hot. A nice thing to do. So anyway, watch the feet or the breath. First of all, present moment awareness. No past, no future, just you right here, right now. And I say the nice thing about breath practice, breath meditation, walking meditation, is you've got all these halls, the three halls here. You've got these red carpets you can do walking meditation on. You notice the colour red on the carpets? I chose those myself because I wanted to encourage walking meditation to give you the red carpet treatment. And also, when you walk on there, just the halls, especially for walking meditation, nothing else. That was really expensive to actually get three halls, big halls, so you can actually do walking meditation. So you can sit down here and you get up and do your walking meditation. You come and sit here, back and forth. The nice thing about the walking meditation is you start at the beginning, you go to the end, you turn around, you come back again. You don't get anywhere. Which is part of walking meditation, which is so important. You end up where you started. Because that stops people always trying to get places. They get somewhere to improve. Meditation is not about getting anywhere. It's being more where you already are and finding what's right in the center of this moment. Trying to get somewhere is endless. The world is spherical. You go round and round and round and round. Back and forth, thinking you're getting anywhere. I was theoretical physicist. Now, I've forgotten most of it. All that hard work. And now, what's left? Only just a tiny echo. And I haven't really got into dementia yet. Give me a few more years. You know that I gave a seminar on dementia. Forget who the doctor was. He was a professor in Singapore on dementia. And I gave the religious part of it, the meditative part of it. And he gave his presentation first. And what he said really shocked me. Because when I gave my presentation, I told him, I said, your definition of dementia, some of the clear signs of dementia are, number one, you just can't remember the past, that you don't really know about the future, and you become socially disengaged. And I said, I've been teaching people that for years. I thought, oh. But this is with some mindfulness and you get energy instead of just it's some failure of the brain. So if you do the walking meditation, you end up where you start off from. So keep it simple. So you can start off just being in the present moment, no past, no future, not going anywhere, just being here. And then just be silent, stop making this big conversation. That's why it's so simple. I don't know how you can have a conversation about walking. Do you know how to walk? Well, that's it. Just start at the beginning, go to the end, come back again. So you know how to walk, so just walk. And but I should be mindful. That's thinking about being mindful. Just walk and you are mindful. There's nothing else to do. Nothing to look at. So you maybe put your gaze 2 meters in front of you so you know when the wall comes and you don't bump into it, because we can't afford the insurance. You keep banging your head. And then you turn around, come back again. No need to go slow or fast. Keep it natural. It usually goes slow by itself after a while, but it's natural, not forced. I have to tell all those stories that this little kid, because I think it's about this time of year, and I go over there for lunch to meet the people over there. And this little family says, all right, we go over to Jhana Grove just to have a look. I said, as long as you don't disturb anybody, because after lunch, the people here are a bit rowdy. So it's after lunch, and so he went over to have a quick look, but be quiet. And he came back to see me, insisted on seeing me just after his brief visit here. And he was really concerned. I thought, what has happened? He was really worried. But has he seen any snakes or something? Over there he got so worried that a tree almost fall on you. Why are you so afraid? He said, "Ata, retreat center. There's zombies. There's zombies there." And I said, "What are you talking about?" I saw all these people walking slowly, and apparently, in movies, zombies walk slowly. So he took one look at you guys walking slowly and thought, that's zombies. And apparently they're very dangerous. They eat your brains, isn't that correct? Anyway, so you walk naturally, and then usually it's quite easy to just watch your feet moving, but don't say lifting, going forward, whatever. It's much more than that. Just allow your mind to sort of focus on just all of the amazing movements. That's like a dancer. You have to train just how to move your body and feet. You don't force it, it just flows. So that's how we do it. Oh my goodness, only a few, and I've only got 3. I'm going to do this fast now. I read the book of Genesis Sutta, okay, and found it fascinating. However, I still have questions a lot. This is Deacon Nikai, and here are 2 points that keep bother me. At the beginning we were all Brahmas, made of mind and self-luminous, but we got stuck into greed. But why greed suddenly appears? Oh, this is the world systems coming and going, Buddhist cosmology. Isn't that a pretty sort of neat idea as far as it goes? But what happens to human beings? We're all supposed to be reborn somewhere. There's no world to be reborn into. So by default, you go to the mind-made realms because there's no body, which means you don't get stuck into the body things, which means that's in the, not the Brahma realms, it's in the Jhana realms. So, and self-luminous, limitless, but we lose it because of greed. It's not greed as a sense of wanting sort of something to eat. It's just the wanting. That's one of the reasons why that messing around with translations, and instead of using the word craving, using wanting for tanha, which is actually much better, because craving is an intense form of wanting. Greed is some, again, just really very demanding form of wanting. This is any wanting. Because you want something, that's why you lose your stillness. And because you lose your stillness, the power of the mind just gets drained. Anyway, if the stop of arahat can only be developed, or the stage of arahat can only be developed through human life, who said that? You can only be an arahat in human life? That is Gomaya. Anagamis, not eternalists, they become arahats in the Sudawasa. So, anyway, developed through human life, when it was a good thing that we have greed, in other terms, bad action can cause good results. That's trying to find a loophole there. Now, if you're in the Deva realms, then just, you know, don't just come back here. If you have to, fine. But, you know, just it's much better to bliss out and disappear there. Dear Ajahn, is dream a defilement? No, it's not a defilement. It is, just depends on, because it's karmically neutral. Simply because that, you know, you've got no real control over it. The will is not there. It's just such a weak will in the dreams. So when you have dreams, you don't really worry about them. If you have negative dreams at night, it's just because you take all your worries and concerns into bed with you. So instead, am I telling too many bad jokes? Okay, then I'll stop there. This was a really bad one. Get to the problem. If you want to hear it, you can ask me in private afterwards. If I keep remembering it. But anyway, it's the same. You're good. So if you want to actually have a good night's sleep, you just tell yourself as you go into sleep, or just like relax to the max. May all beings be happy and well, including me. May I have a good night's sleep. Good night, me. And just give some loving kindness to all beings and to yourself to relax. And you tend not to have dreams. But if you're tired, of course, sometimes you do have dreams because your brain is still active. So anyway, that's dreams are defilement. It's the type of dream. That's a defilement or not. Dear Ajahn, today some jealousy arose in my mind, remembering the ownerless of things helped. When states like jealousy, covetousness arise, are these things one should let be and let them fade away naturally? Yeah, explore them. They're teaching you something. So, you know, that's what you did there, so jealousy. So, what's the point of that? Jealousy that someone else is more enlightened than I am. Oh, wonderful. I'm so happy that you are enlightened. But be careful, because it reminded me of this story. There was a fake teacher, but he was one of the people that some of you know very well. He was doing some meditation with his teacher, and then he would call up and tell his wife and said, "Oh, I've been confirmed. I'm a spring winner by this teacher." It was in Sri Lanka, but some of you, I'm not going to tell anyone because sometimes you know what I'm talking about, but. It was very funny. And then rang up a couple of days later, and his wife here in Perth, he said, "Oh, there's Sakadagami, a once returner today." I just was told by the teacher. And said, "Oh, the wife was really devout Buddhist. Oh, well done, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's amazing news." And then a week or two later, he rang up again, non-returner. And then the wife said, "That's enough. Come back home now And when you've paid off the mortgage, then you can go back again and become an owner. That'd be an expensive home. And he was up there getting enlightened and that left her without all to pay all the bills. And that was such a funny response. That's enough, come on, pay off the mortgage first, then you can go off and get enlightened. So that was really funny. What did I come with that? Okay. When meditating, constantly get interrupted with thoughts that give rise to delusion, illusion for a few seconds. It is more when we are doing meditation at home, regular basis. Is that due to interactions with the material world? Yeah. It's because, again, this is just the echoes of what you've been doing before. You get these thoughts coming in. But what's the therapy for that? Is one of the things is before you meditate at home, for the few minutes before, just preparation, just relax, have a shower or something, have a cup of tea or orange juice or whatever, you relax. So you get physical relaxation first of all, and then you go to meditate, and then your body is actually calming down. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, it's the first day we keep it loose, but please the noble silence, don't have conversations with one another. Because those conversations, they will start getting the brain into the talking mode. So try and keep it quiet. It's not just the rule you can get punished for. I haven't got my secret police. We don't have CCTV cameras finding out what you do in your cottages. We don't go and have the talking police. You talk. What was it, complaining? There's that story of the couple. They'd been married for about 60 years, and on the 60th anniversary, they got interviewed, I think it was in CNN or something. And then they said, well, how come you've been, have you had any arguments in all those 60 years? They said, we only had an argument once, just on a honeymoon, and never since. He said, well, really? And that's almost impossible in married life, you don't argue. And he said, well, what happened? He said, well, we honeymooned in the Grand Canyon. And we're on the donkeys going down the track. And my wife, her donkey stumbled. And my wife sort of told that donkey, that's the first time. I didn't know what she was talking about. And the donkey stumbled a second time. That's the second time, donkey, with more severity. And a bit further down the track, her donkey stumbled again. She took out a gun and shot the donkey dead. And the husband, he said, and I told her, what do you do that for? That's the first time. We haven't had an argument since. Sorry about the bad jokes, but it's this time of the night. So anyway, remember, if I catch you talking, I'll say to you, that's the first time. Okay. Just curious about the teddy bears. Indeed. That is the secret koan of Jhana Grove. What are the teddy bears doing here? You'll soon find out. Dear Ajahn Brahm, what is right mindfulness? Conversely, what is wrong mindfulness? How do I remember mindful of thoughts and thinking without killing the thought process or destroying creativity? I'll leave that till tomorrow. Ajahn, today some jealousy, eh? Okay, oh, the jealousy one. Exactly. Okay. No, it's just 906. So I'll just answer the teddy bear ones. So the mindfulness and stuff like that I'll answer tomorrow. About the teddy bears. One of the reasons we have a few people who have been here for a while, these teddy bears, we do a type of meditation called bear awareness. Bear awareness. Okay. Sometimes people say bear awareness, B-A-R-E, awareness. which means just being mindful, nothing else. But this is bare awareness, B-E-A-R. And what you do, you put it on your lap and you cuddle it. And then what happens is you get this beautiful feeling of contentment. It arouses kindness and compassion. It stops restlessness because it's nice cuddling a teddy bear. When you start cuddling the teddy bear, you'll find your meditation has that extra little bit of happiness and kindness. Teddy bears are non-threatening. And teddy bears, many people, I was amazed, as a kid you grew up with a teddy bear, and I thought it was maybe just Western culture, but it's throughout the whole world, you know, they're like teddy bears. It's some sort of something which reminds you of safety, kindness, softness. It's really cuddly. But you have your little teddy bear and you meditate. It brings you into the present moment because the present moment becomes happy, not fearful. And it becomes safe. It becomes kind, delightful. And that's all it's needed to get the mind into starting into some very deep meditation. So these are little meditation helps, skillful means, how to meditate with little teddy bear. And there's all types of teddy bears. This, I must admit, is my favourite. I don't know what sort of sexual orientation this is supposed to represent. But anyhow, you can choose your teddy bears over there if you really want to cuddle one when you're meditating. And you know what happened? There's these really tough guys. You know, this is meditation. Teddy bears, I want the real tough stuff. And no, this actually works. People come and say, yeah, I tried the teddy bear and it just changed the whole meditation, made it so easy. So you can try teddy bear meditations. We've got some. Every time, it's amazing that every time I come in, there's more teddy bears than there were before. So I don't think they're keeping the 8 precepts. I see some little small ones there somewhere. Okay, so that's it for tonight. I'll do the other ones afterwards. So, 3 sadhus. Sadhu. 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 Very good. So now, about 3 times and go to bed. Oh, see, this is a nice little bed for the teddy bear. Tuck it in. There you go.